How's it going, everybody? Welcome to that time of the week. Oh, man. There we go. All right. Sorry about that. All right, everybody. Welcome to that time of the week. I'm your host, Matthew Morgan. And today, we are going to be talking about, a little bit of everything, I guess. As of currently, I wanted to start by talking about the draft. The draft is still going on. It might be over at this point in time. It is still happening, apparently. So, I guess next week we'll get a better feel of how everything breaks down. But in the first round, Ohio State had the most players drafted at 4. Which, by the way, has only been achieved by 2 other schools in NFL history. The schools being Michigan State in 1967. And which would have been the 66 season, and then Notre Dame in 1946, which would have been the 46 season, which I think is just interesting, because during World War II, they had, you know, they drafted people who played football in college, so apparently some of them went. Right after the 1946 season, they held the draft. That way, the people who played in the 1945 season, basically that way they could draft people who were returning from war. There's that. I just thought that was a neat little thing to throw in there. But, I would like to say that they both did win the national champ. Now, to be fair, national champions were like a whole different thing before 2016? National champion used to be like a pool, kind of like a rank-based thing. Like, they would just kind of be like, hey, I don't know, kind of like how they do the ranking system now, I guess, except whoever ends up number one at the end of the season would be the national champion. There's that, I guess. But Ohio State, even with the with them being the only school, or only other school, only one of 3 schools in history to do so. And, And they lost the... Well, they actually had to play a national championship game, but they lost the national championship. And they weren't ranked number one. Indiana was. But, I mean, I feel like I got something in my throat. But the 4 people who were drafted from Ohio State, Carnell Tate, he was a wide receiver, taken at number 4 by the Titans, which, by the way, 1 second. All right, hopefully that works. I just tried to clear my throat, muted the mic for a second. Carnell Tate, who was a wide receiver, taken at number 4 by the Tennessee Titans. Which extends Ohio State's streak of having a wide receiver go in the first round, and this will be 5 years straight. So, good for them, I guess. 5 years straight, they're ending up as a wide receiver U, I guess. They had Arvell Reese, great player, great linebacker, I guess. He is a linebacker from Ohio State, taken at number 5. So they have 4 or 5, taken at number 5 by the Giants, which makes him the first Ohio State defensive player to be selected in the top 5 since 2020. So, again, good for him. Arvell Reese absolutely doing wonders over there for Ohio State. The last of the linebackers, I guess, in the first round. Sonny Styles was also a linebacker, taken at number 7. Personally, I liked Sonny Styles better than Arvell Reese, but, you know, I'm not in the draft. But Sonny Styles was taken at number 7 by the Commanders, and, I do believe, by the way, I could be wrong on this, but I do believe Arvell Reese is the highest drafted Ohio State defensive player since Chase Young. And Chase Young went at the 2nd overall pick. In, something like that. and Caleb Downs. And Caleb Downs being a safety, taken at number 11 by the Cowboys, who, by the way, traded up to get him. I believe that this makes him the first safety to be drafted top 15 in the NFL draft since Kyle Hamilton in 2022. Yeah. So, Ohio State has the first safety taken in 4 years, and they had two linebackers go top 10, and Arvell Reese, I do believe, like I said, is the highest pick since Chase Young at 2. Colonel Tate was taken at 4. So they have 4, 5, 7, and 11. So yeah, great for them. They did good work as far as putting players into the NFL. But could you imagine having 4 players go top 15? Okay, 4 players go top 15, and you still can't make it to the national. You don't even make it to the national championship. You lose in the playoffs to Miami, who loses to Indiana in the championship. And we did lose to Indiana at one point. I forgot about that. Yes, we lost to Indiana at one point as well. So there's that. But speaking of Miami, by the way, Miami did have people go in the draft as well. By the way, if you have anything you'd like to say, do feel free to call in. 740-383-9944. That is 740-383-9944. Doesn't have to talk about football. Doesn't have to be talk about the draft. Same thing. Doesn't have to be talk about the war or politics. We can talk about whatever you want. But yes, Miami had 3 people go in the first round, and that'd be the first time, by the way, all 3 of these schools that I have listed off here had fantastic drafts. Miami had 3 people go in the first round, which is their first time since 2007, so it's been, 19 years for them. Great for the program to have a resurgence. And the players they had being Francis Maligoa. I don't know if I got that right. Francis Maligoa, he is an offensive lineman, selected number 10, so selected right before Caleb Downs by the Giants, which, good. The Giants, I'm a big fan of the Giants as they're currently being rebuilt by Mr. Harbaugh. I like a lot of their team. For some reason, I can't think of the names. I got Jackson Dart. You got Cam Scataboo, and I can't think of the wide receiver, but he got hurt, so that's not my fault. He didn't play half the season. Name's not burnt into my brain. Malik Nabers, there you go. But, yes, so they got an offensive lineman to protect Jackson Dart, which is good for them. Jackson Dart got hurt a lot last year, and he took a lot of hits last year. And he did a lot of scrambling around last year that he shouldn't have had to do. So hopefully Maligoa is pretty good and can do well for the Giants. They also have Reuben Bain Jr., defensive end, drafted number 15 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know anything about him, and I don't really know the defensive situation of the Buccaneers. I'll be 100% with you on this one. I don't know much about the Buccaneers. I haven't kept up with the Buccaneers since Tom Brady and Robert Gronkowski both left. And I think that Tom Brady owns a piece of the Raiders now. So, yeah. He's not even bought into the Buccaneers anymore. Anyways, good for them. That's their second. And their third player is Akeem Mezidor, another defensive end, drafted number 22 to the Chargers. So 2 defensive ends and an offensive lineman, and all of that just to have them lose to Indiana in the national championship. Which, by the way, Indiana had people drafted. They had 2 people go in the first first round. Yeah, 2 people go in the first round. And that would be the first time in program history for Indiana. So congratulations to Indiana on that. And I'm sure that they are going to build upon this like they have never, they're going to try at least, like they like have never tried to do anything before. Indiana had Fernando Mendoza. He was a quarterback. This is pretty much the guy everybody figured was going to go number one. He did, in fact, go number one, taken by the Las Vegas Raiders. Hopefully, Clint Kubiak can put that can put him into put effectively put him into the system. I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm sure Kubiak's got a whole system he's trying to build. It's his first year over there, so let's see what Mendoza can do for them. And Omar Cooper Jr., wide receiver, selected number 30 by the Jets. So they only had two players, and they won the national championship. But, you know, it's not exactly the same thing, I guess, but it's fine. So, long story short, I did all of that just to prove that draft picks don't matter, I suppose. But no, Ohio State definitely, in my opinion, should have won that national championship last year. They played rather poorly, I think. To have a wide receiver who goes number four, the number 5, 7, and 11, two linebackers and a safety. Like, I don't know, that's an NFL defense you're rocking right there. And maybe their offense just isn't built like that. But we did lose to Miami. Miami did well, and, you know, that's how it goes. And then Miami did less well and lost to Indiana. But Mendoza's, you know, doing well, I guess, or will be hopefully doing well for the Raiders. Real quick, I want to see if all Ohio State players taken in the draft... I would figure there have been more. I mean, it would not surprise me. Let's see here. Closed. I think that's a draft thing. Yes, Carnell Tate. Arvell Reese. Sonny Styles. Caleb Downs. Yes, alright, so there have been players taken in the second round for Ohio State. So good for them. At number 36, so which is going to be pick number 4 of the second round, they take Caden McDonald, defensive tackle. He was projected to go in the first round as well, but not so high. Pick number 61, which is going to be... I'm not doing the math. This is a lot of math. I want to say 29. and the Max Clair... Yeah, tight end. You know, Ohio State has never produced a good tight end as far as I know, so I'll keep an eye on him, I guess, but I don't have a lot of faith in him. Right after he was taken, another Ohio State player was taken, and Davison Igbinosun? Yeah, Davison Igbinosun, if I had to take a guess on how to pronounce that. Yeah, which is a cornerback. He was drafted to the Buffalo Bills. The Bills need a cornerback. They recently lost somebody. I can't remember who. But that's it so far. So that's a lot of Ohio State players. Up to this point, there have been 1, 2, 3... So 7. 7 Ohio State players taken. I do believe. So, that's what you want. Ohio State's doing well. 7 players taken in the draft, and you can't win the national championship. Big L. Fire Ryan Day. Yeah, I don't know what to say about that, but that's definitely a lack of something there. But anyways, the draft has been progressing quite well. Fantasy football, if you are doing fantasy football, should be starting up soon. You know, the draft is usually when most people set their draft after. At least that's always how I have done it in any league I've ever done. Typically, you like to wait until you see where the teams or where the players go before you draft them. It is literally part of my drafting strategy. I don't watch college football, so I just pay attention to what schools they come from, what team they went to, and what position they are. because schools have certain positions that they do better than other schools, and teams have certain positions that they scout better than other teams. Like, Iowa's really good at tight ends. And I know that Sam Laporta came from Iowa, and I know that TJ Hawkinson came from Iowa, and he was on the Lions and did really well before he was traded to the Vikings. So then when they drafted Sam Laporta out of Iowa, I figured that they had a pretty good beat on him, and they did. He is now one of the best tight ends in the NFL as of currently. So, it's a good strategy. I'd keep that in mind if you don't watch college football and do fantasy drafts. But I guess with that being said, by the way, the Big Ten is leading the NFL right now as far as players drafted. I don't know about in the first round, at least they are or were. It's over. But I don't know because it is now rounds 2 and 3. So I don't know exactly. It's got to be almost done now, I would assume. But yes, now I guess we can leave the football there. I don't really know what else there is to say. The draft is still ongoing. Next week we'll have a much better picture, but, I got some politics stories here, so we're going to go ahead and, touch on these. Now I've brought it up, I think, in a couple of shows, maybe this morning show, but, U.S. forces, apparently, I don't have the... Anyways, the Pentagon is saying that they are going to go ahead and track down... Oh, here we go. So, the military has released a detailed and expansive list of goods that it considers contraband, declaring that it will board, search, and seize them from merchant vessels regardless of location. A notice published Thursday says any goods that are destined for an enemy and may be susceptible to use in armed conflict are subject to capture at any place beyond neutral territory. So, they are going to start raiding. I like to call it raiding. I don't know if that's the right word for it. But they're going to start searching and seizing things from merchant ships that fly an Iranian flag or are linked to Iran or do business with Iran or come from Iranian ports or have come from Iranian ports. I know that they have tracked or are in the allegedly, I mean, that's what they say, that they're in the process of tracking down ships that left port before the blockade was, you know, established. So, I guess there's that. I don't know. I don't think it's gonna do us. I don't think that if we want a ceasefire that's going to last, this is going to be a good way to go about it. I think that you're just gonna make them upset, and nobody's gonna get anything done. And I think that that's likely what's going. There is a second round. Oh, I guess it's one of the things I have to talk about here, but diplomats are heading to... I wanted to make sure... Yeah, it's still Pakistan. Diplomats are heading to Pakistan for another round of talks with Iran. I don't know who exactly the diplomats are. I do believe the article I read used the word envoys. But I'm pretty sure an envoy is just a group of diplomats. You know? But nonetheless... the envoy is, I guess, on the way to Pakistan. And I guess they're going to have another talk with Iran, and hopefully something comes of that. Now, the last talks were not very fruitful. Nothing came of it. I don't know what's going to happen with this one. I guess we'll find out. But I don't think it's going to be great, because I don't remember who it was, but there was a member of the Iranian... now, ministry, I guess, their government, who said basically that the ceasefire or a deal wouldn't be possible unless the blockade ended. But it's a whole thing. I don't know what's going to happen here. I think that it's going to be an uphill battle as far as getting that thing signed sooner rather than later. But maybe that's just the cynic in me. But yes, speaking of the boarding of ships, the U.S. forces boarded an oil tanker that had previously been sanctioned for smuggling Iranian crude oil into Asia. And the Pentagon, yes, said into this was Tuesday, and it put into place a global warning to track down vessels tied to Tehran. So yes, that's the whole thing where they said that they're going to go to, you know, any location, neutral water, if you're linked to Iran, or you know, having a flying Iranian flag, so on and so forth. That everything I listed off in the beginning there. Then you will be searched and, you know, searched, seized, and that kind of thing. But yes, so, I guess, anything that can be used in armed conflict, which sounds like pretty much anything, I guess, but they do, I guess, get a little more specific. They say it includes products such as weapons, obviously, ammunition, obviously, military equipment, obviously, those three are pretty much givens, but, oil, iron, steel, aluminum, and other goods that can be considered as conditional contraband. I guess because it can be used for both civilian and military goods. Otherwise, innocuous items like electronics, power generation equipment, or heavy machinery can be seized if circumstances indicate intended military end use. I don't know how you're... I mean, I guess maybe if you find, like, you know, the heavy machinery and, you know, power generation and whatnot, with a whole bunch of guns and ammo, you probably assume it's for military goods. But, you know, I don't think that raiding these ships is going to be all that great. I don't think it's going to... The world... I think it would just be better if we just agreed to, like, why don't we just say, hey, you go away with the block. I don't know. I don't know. I personally would just be like, we'll get rid of our blockade, you get rid of your blockade, we'll stop bombing you, you stop bombing us. Like, I think it's a pretty substantial good trade there. Now, I understand that people want to, like, win out in a trade or in a deal, but... I don't really think that that's going to be possible for a minute. I mean, we've done a lot more damage to them than I thought, I guess. Where's the thing at? Sorry, I have my notes all kinds of unorganized here. But yes, according to military officials, Iran has larger military capabilities than the White House or Pentagon has publicly admitted. According to, multiple U.S. officials who have spoken on a condition of anonymity, because obviously they don't have the authority to discuss it. So, they do give some numbers here. So, bear with me, I'm going to read off some numbers. About half of Iran's missiles and missile launch systems were still intact as of the start of the ceasefire. There's that. So, you got about half of their missiles and missile launch systems still intact. Roughly 60% of their navy still exists. And about two-thirds of their air force is still believed to be operational. So, you have about half of the missiles... A little over half of the Navy, and a little under 70% of their Air Force. So over half of their military is still capable of fighting. I don't know that they will. I hope that... I don't want to say I hope that they won't, because I mean, you know... But I just want the war to end, you know? But, So we've done a lot of damage to them. I mean, I would assume that if this is all based on, like, 100% being before the war. So if that's the case, like, 100% being before the war, destroying 40% of their navy in, you know, like, a month and a half, 2 months, something like that. I don't even know when this thing started anymore. That's a lot of damage in a short time period, I would think. And if the goal is to completely destroy, obliterate them militarily, I do believe is what I've heard. I don't know that the ceasefire is going to be any good. If the goal is to destroy the military, which I'm not a fan of, but you know, that's, I do believe that was said at one point in time. I could be wrong on that one though. But if we have if they have over, I don't know, something like, let's round it, 60% of their military left. I mean, that's pretty good for 2 months. Now, I don't think it's worth it, but it's efficient, I guess. Now, missiles are expensive. We have spent $50 billion on the war. Now, that's going to have to come from somewhere. I don't know exactly where the $50 billion is going to come from, but I could assume it's going to come from domestic spending. Trump had tried to raise the military budget by $100 billion at one point in time, and to make up that money, because you know, you gotta free up some money somewhere. He cut. I don't think it passed, but because you know, a lot of money, big military budget. But he wanted to cut $72 billion in domestic spending. I don't know what exactly he's looking for. I mean, I don't think he's going to get what he wants. I mean, nobody gets exactly what they want. I think he's going to have to kind of figure that out. But apparently, the deal that Obama made with Iran, I did not read the whole deal or anything. I have a very basic understanding. It goes something along the lines of Iran can't produce, enriched nuclear material for something like 15 years, I think. And Donald Trump said that Iran just shouldn't be allowed to have it at all. So, you know, that's a big step there to take. I don't think you're going to get him to not have the nuclear in it. I think that it'd be best to just insist that the IEA come in, the International Energy Agency, and you let them do all the monitoring that they always do. So, you know, they're monitored by an independent global organization, and I think it would just be best to regulate it, essentially. I mean, you're not going to stop them. They're just going to end up being, it's just going to keep recurring that there's going to be a problem, but I don't know. It would just be a lot. I say it as a joke a lot, but I don't think we should actually give everybody a nuke, but it would be a lot simpler if everybody did have one. There would be no fear of anybody getting a nuke, because we all already have one. And then maybe we could all just take a step back and breathe and calm down and maybe try to, you know, diplomacy a little more than just blowing people up. We love to use missiles, and I'm not sure why. They're absurdly expensive, and, you know, you can burn through missiles pretty fast. And I'm not talking about just the United States. Everybody, in general, the world. But here's hoping to that, I guess. As of currently, there are more than 10,000 American troops deployed to helping enforce the blockade on the Iranian ports. That's a lot of people. I mean, I do believe beforehand it was 50,000 is how many were deployed, according to the U.S. military. So if you have, I don't know if these are the same ships or if they deployed extra ships for the blockade. I mean, I'd assume you have to deploy extra ships for a blockade. But you're talking at least, 6,000 more American troops for the blockade than was already over there. So I think that, you know, there's that. My phone's about to die. It's at 4%, so we gotta, I guess, get hustling with this. But there was also, I wanted to bring this up, because we had talked about AI potentially taking jobs, on the on the shows prior, not tonight, but just prior shows in general. And there seems to be a consensus among some people that it will just not happen, or because you know you got to have people to do the things with AI to like you know that kind of thing. But I saw an article that Meta is like the company that owns Facebook, the conglomerate that owns Facebook, formerly just Facebook, but then they got too big for their britches and then had to split into a whole bunch of subsidiaries. That way, they don't break the monopoly laws. Meta cut 8,000 jobs, or 10% of its staff, as they decide to lean on AI for certain things. So that's, you know, 10% of Meta's staff. Again, that's just like Facebook, and they also own Instagram and like Threads, I think, is another one of their social media platforms. So they cut 8,000 jobs, about 10% of its staff. Microsoft has offered a buyout to about 7% of their staff and already has AI doing roughly 30% of the coding work. Pinterest has cut roughly 700 to 800 employees, or about 15% of its workforce. They're also going to lean on AI. Oracle, which is like a tech company, they're going to cut 20 to 30,000 people, employees. Citigroup, the bank, roughly 20,000. UPS, roughly 30,000. Amazon, roughly 16. And, you know, I mean, that's just, those are just some numbers I found on a couple articles doing quick Google searches. The one from Meta was from today or yesterday or something like that, from CBS. I got the other ones, like, I don't know, New York Times and some other things like that. But, yeah, I could go on. I mean, there are all kinds of businesses that are shrinking manpower because AI. So the robots might not take your jobs, but the AI certainly will. The machines, I don't know, machines I guess never didn't take jobs in factories really. I mean, they just kind of, maybe they did, I don't know. I know that they certainly made things more efficient. But I don't know that it was overall good, I guess. But yeah. So, by the way, I would like to say that only, I don't know, 30 to maybe 50,000 of these are directly linked to AI. But the majority of the companies say something along the lines of, like, they're going to utilize AI to streamline the process so small teams can do more with AI. Or I guess AI just allows small teams to do more would be probably the easier way to phrase it. Which I think is probably true, but imagine what a big team with AI could... I don't know. It just seems like one of those things where, like, yeah, you could do the same thing by cutting manpower, but could you imagine what more you could get done if you didn't? I don't know. It just... a lot of things don't make sense to me. Also, I understand cost-cutting. I mean, overhead employees are probably going to be your main... you know, your main cost always. I mean, you gotta pay people. And, I just don't exactly know that... I don't know. Most consumer-grade AI is kind of... I mean, I don't know, weak at this point. But... they already have AI doing 30% of the coding at Microsoft. I mean, they laid off about 15, not laid off, fired, about 15% of their staff at Pinterest, like 10%, you know, those are just roughly 20 to 30,000 people from Oracle, just big tech company, the banks, 20, like, it just seems absurd to me. I think that, there might be another, I don't know what you want to call it, a bubble burst, I guess, I think is what they refer to it as in the economics, the AI bubble. I think, as of currently, a lot of companies are switching to using AI to do a lot of stuff, and it's certainly cut into the manpower that they need. Good for the businesses, bad for the people, I think. So there's that. But by the way, I did hear there's the whole thing about AI or not AI, like data centers and water consumption. Farms in America alone. One second. I want to make sure I have it right. But I do believe I read one day that farms in America alone consume more water than the world, than all of the world's data centers put together. If that's true, then I mean we should probably still try to conserve water. And I think that data farms are probably still bad, but I think we should probably try to find a less water, a way to just utilize water more efficiently in the farm industry. I'm typing. Does the farmland in the U.S. take more water than global? All right. By the way, if I don't know if you guys like computers at all, but the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. Yada yada yada. Sorry, there's a big long article. I'm just looking for the. Yes. According to the, once again, Lincoln Institute of Land, I guess. This is a bigger thing than I thought it was going to be. Anyways, I don't know to what scale, but I do believe American farmlands consume a lot more water than the, data centers do. Now, I'm not saying we should build data centers, like I said. I mean, generally speaking, I think that, that technology is good enough as is. We should probably stop focusing on technology and, we should probably focus on what technology has done to the social fabric of the world. But, what do I know, I guess? It would just seem to me that people are not getting along. I mean, I guess people haven't gotten along forever, so it's not like it's new, I guess. I don't know. It seems AI centers do use a lot of water, though. So that's a lot of water. But I think that we should probably stop using so much water as is, like I said. I mean, we have droughts a lot. I mean, the, what do they call them? The aquifers? The big bodies of water underneath us that they pull the water from. I do believe they're like aquifers. They they naturally refill because of rainwater and things. But we use a lot of it, and we use more than it can put back sometimes, and it causes droughts and things like that, and they put rations on the water and whatnot. So I don't think that using more water is probably great. So I don't know. I guess I'm interested to see where the whole future goes with the data centers. I mean, I know that's a big thing in Ohio right now is the data centers, but we also have a lot of farmland. I don't know. It just seems like one of those. It kind of reminds me of like pollution, how people have like farm, like cows release a lot of methane gas, I do believe is what it is, and because, you know, cows, cow poop. So cows are like very, like, pollute a lot. And I you know, I guess maybe we shouldn't try to control nature, I guess. I don't know. I think when you try to play God and it never works well, I mean, you know, you're infinitely dumber than than the universe. So that's just my opinion, I suppose. I don't know. But as far as the state of the world goes, I guess, the Iran war is on pause, so I'm happy with that. There is an election coming up. Amy Acton and Vivek Ramaswamy. Casey Putsch is in the race there, too. Heather Hill, I guess, is no longer in the race after her running mate has dropped... sent a letter to, I guess, the Secretary of State saying that he is rescinding his... forms to run. And apparently that's a whole thing. There were apparently some words said. Not great things. apparently he had Stewart. I can't think of his last name. But apparently that was Heather Hill's running mate, Stewart something. He called allegedly. I don't know the factuality of all this. But apparently he had called her the N-word, and he had called her the B-word, and she had apparently brought up, like, I don't know, his wife's, and I don't know. It just ended up being a whole thing, and he says that he might sue her for it. So I guess we're gonna see where that whole thing goes. I think that maybe she has tried to petition to stay on the ballot somehow. I'm not 100% sure, but I guess we shall see what happens with that, if that anything comes with that. But yes. If you have anything you would like to say, do feel free to call in. We got about 2.5 minutes, 740-383-9944. Now, you can listen anytime at www.wwgh1071.com. At the bottom of the page is going to be a button that says Listen Live. You can just go ahead and tap on that. It's going to be a play button. You can tap on that, and you should be able to get us. You can listen on the free TuneIn app. You can just download the free TuneIn app. I don't even think you need to make an account. And then you can just look up WGH Talk, and we will be there. It'll say WGH Talk, Marion, Ohio. And that will be us. You can find us on just about any smart device, smart TV, Alexa, Google Nest, so on and so forth. However you're listening now obviously works. I'm sure there's other websites and things that we are unaware of, but we keep tanking along as far as that goes. So... plenty of ways to listen, and we are live 24/7, 7 days a week. I guess that would be 24/7, huh? No, 24/7, 365. There you go. So yes, by the way, I guess in the last minute here, I almost missed this story entirely. I forgot to. I'll skip this. We can talk about it next week. I want to talk about this one, I guess. U.S. Justice Department to bring back firing squads as a federal death penalty method. I guess they have said that they want to try to streamline the death penalty. And now I don't know if they mean necessarily that they want to kill more people with the death penalty. I think that maybe. They just mean, like, streamline it as far as efficiency goes. I mean, I know you can get, like, if evidence comes out, you can get acquitted, and there are ways you can get off of the death penalty, but, I guess they just want to try to speed that up, and, you can do, they went back to the lethal injection procedure from Trump's first term, brought back a firing squad, and, yeah, so... I guess that's gonna. It'll be interesting when the firing squad execution happens, I suppose. But yeah. So I guess with that being said, we got about 10 seconds left. So I appreciate everybody for listening, As always, I hope you have a wonderful night. Yeah, I mean, it is warm outside. Try to stay cool, and I hope you have a wonderful night. I'm pretty sure I already said that, but ain't nothing like, ain't nothing like, reassurance. Have a good night, and goodbye.
My name is Margaret, and I thought that was too mouthy.